Becky Johnson with arrests for chalking, or going into that back at city council several weeks ago, just as he manhandled a woman named Jen Curry in January of a year ago for riding the wrong way on her bike, creating a scene there, just as he improperly handled the Sean Duncan hit-and-run accident, which happened during the Bush counter-inaugural, where a bicyclist, Sean Duncan, was hit by a motorist, and then Baker let the motorist go without so much as a citation. Baker has a history of this kind of stuff, and he's an amiable enough guy. I've had many a conversation with him. He's a family man. He's sat on the board of the Homeless Services Center, for better or for worse. I've occasionally gone into his rather sordid, what I regard as his sordid background in the early 90s, which I don't go into in detail because it's not directly relevant, you know. But it's interesting that this guy is in such a position of power, unchained or unrestrained by the police department, and he can just continue these kind of capers downtown against, you know, he's lost a court case for ticketing some guy with a sign, Steve Elliott with a sign, because Steve is a disabled person with a panhandling sign who just sits there. He doesn't say anything. He just sits there. That's legal, but Baker couldn't even read the law. He had the wrong ordinance. And, you know, we had to visit the city attorney's office four times to get that one changed. All this was last year. I mean, this goes on. You know, Baker is not well trained on these issues, or a slow learner. I have to say more than that. I think he is, and I got to say this, Lauren, I'm sorry if you're listening, but I think you're a bad cop on this matter. I think you are in the wrong business. And I think you need to do something else. And I think the community needs you to do something else. And I don't say this out of any malice. Jeff, did you want to say something?
Well, just not to overlook, I'm more alarmed. It's kind of routine that some officers are going to be overzealous, and the courts are there, and judges can throw things out. And I don't know about this particular officer, but I know sometimes the police are not always the prime culprit. And in this case, I'm more alarmed to see the news media trample all over this important First Amendment issue and mock it and make fun of it. I mean, Officer Baker, for better or for worse, we know what to expect. He's going to be a hard-nosed cop. He's going to be a hardline. He might step over the line from time to time. He may even admit it. But it's all subjected to judicial review. Who's going to review the misrepresentations that have been put forth by Good Times? Only us. Only us right now in the media. And I'd just like to make two other problems with this article, which goes to their fact-checking. And one is, the contention in the paper is just arbitrarily thrown out that some hippies and homeless are discriminated against, while passerbys, quote, claim they've been harassed by the crowd who hangs out there. Now, there's not one quote, there's not any iota of evidence, and I would just like to know if this is, again, derivative from Mr. Penn's, Penna, P-E-N-N-A, Mr. Penna's diatribe, or if it's something that just popped into the reporter's head. And that's clearly not really substantiated. In fact, to the contrary, I've heard tapes of people who specifically state that the crowd is nice and behaves well, and also Robert Norris has proposed even a code of conduct. Certainly if there has been any incidents of lewd remarks or anything of that nature, there are remedies, there are actionable. Some of these actions could themselves be crimes, and I don't think that the very presence of a group of young people in and of itself is cause to say, well, they're harassing people, let's just get rid of them. I mean, there is a right of public assembly, there is a right of free association. And I'd like to see where Krista Martin gets her facts, because my understanding, those kids are very well behaved. The second point, Robert, I'd like to put in is that they reported Mr. Penn is, again, part of his whole right-wing fantasy trip is that Robert Norris stages these things. That's a direct quote. Robert stages these things. Now, excuse me, Mr. Penn, I hope you're listening. If Robert staged this, I would like to know, where is the ubiquitous videotaping? Because what I'm sure you would think of as the legions of Robert Norris, are armed with the tools of peaceful, nonviolent social change. And one of these is videotaping and photography. Where's the videotape? Certainly there would have been, if it was actually a staged provocation, to create this arrest scenario, the whole thing would have been videotaped. So that's, as far as I'm concerned, that's factual proof. This was not staged, and in fact it was not staged, because I seriously doubt Robert Norris has the ability to control the behavior of the police officers involved. And I'd like to, you know, I mean, how would this happen? Would Robert call up and say, hey, would you like to come over and bust? I have a traveler from Philly. Why don't you come down and bust her and let's get the media down there? No, I don't think that's how it works. In fact, it was not staged at all. Robert Norris, whether you like him or don't, you have to admit the fact of the matter is he had a perfectly legal petition. He was opposing a decision by the city council, which, let us not forget, was made in a manner that was not in compliance with the Brown Act. It was basically snuck in, if I understand correctly.
Well, no, it technically met the Brown Act requirements. What it didn't meet were was the I think, fair public process, which would involve a real public hearing on such a major change in the sidewalk, and particularly since it was done specifically to target this youth group. It wasn't like other expansions of the business community have been, like when there have been iron wrought fences put in up the street at the Kelly's Bakery or in other places up, you know, on Pacific Avenue. This was clearly being done to deal with a social problem, and you know, I think that's a very controversial thing. Yeah, but it wasn't a violation of the Brown Act, and we were allowed to comment on it. Unlike, for example, I was not allowed to comment at City Council on a whole variety of matters, and that was a violation of the Brown Act that happened during the last council meeting.
Okay, now enough said about. I mean, I don't think anyone out there regards Good Times as true source of new journalistic information. They're independent media center, and others are really a much better source of facts. But I'd like to just move on and let that rest. The other issue that really concerns me, and is a very serious matter, is the total lack of context. This is just being really flippantly lampooned as a so-called, quote-unquote, soap opera. But in fact, I believe it's pretty obvious that we have a very serious matter facing us right now in the United States with the attrition of civil liberties. The Patriot, what is it called, the Patriot Act, and other measures, the establishment of the Office of Homeland Security, all raise a real specter of the erosion of very important civil liberties that we have tended to take for granted. And we all need to be on heightened alert right now for any measures that are going to threaten our civil liberties, because it would be with someone like John Ashcroft, who has a history of, I would tend to call it, racism. Mr. Ashcroft, who is, I don't have a problem with him being a Christian, but I have a problem with him using his office as almost a church, and he does have it like a church service in his actual office in the Judicial Department. You know, we stand to lose a lot, folks. We can lose in the next 10 years, in fact, perhaps even in the next 5 years, we can lose a big part of the civil liberties we've enjoyed in this country for 200 years. We have had denials in the past, obviously, and in particular people of color, but right now there's a tendency for a whole hog washing away. In fact, right now there's a struggle because there's a law that's been passed that only U.S. citizens are allowed to work as baggage handlers at the airports, and there are many Filipino workers who, you know, speak good English, and their families have worked with the United States to fight against the Japanese in World War II and so forth. These are good people, and they work as baggage handlers, and there hundreds of them are being dismissed as quote-unquote illegal aliens.
Actually, Jeff, there's going to be someone calling in from Oakland on that issue, hopefully in the next hour. Before we leave the issue of, we're not going to leave it, we'll keep coming back to it, the Baker, I should say, it's not about Butchie Baker, it's not about Zoe Feinbiter, it's not about me, it's about the city council and the businesses and the privatization of the area, and also it's about, as you say, the First Amendment and the fact that the police department's suborning into being a private security force for merchants and the tools of the downtown association in this situation. So what I'm going to do is, I mean, the one thing about the article I noticed was that there was very little about the issue. I mean, why was it an important issue to those of us who were there? No, the only thing important was all the drama the soap opera was really all of the Good Times making. I mean, they painted it that way. Their interest is in these dramatic circumstances. We can't get the Good Times to do a substantive story on this issue. They're not interested in this issue, even though it's sitting right outside their headquarters. The Good Times office is right across from Hippie Planter and New Leaf Market. They know what's going on. They don't give a shit, just like New Leaf Market. Or if they do, they've got more important things to do. Not that, you know, and they've done some good work, as I said. We've talked about that. Being able to put up banners on the freeway without getting them torn down by right-wing police departments and Caltrans authorities is important, and I'm glad that they cover that. But they also have to cover the hotter topics that are closer to home. In fact, closer to their office, right across the street. And they're not doing that. So maybe a quick call to the Good Times might be appropriate, asking them to get off the dime and do some real news activity on this, particularly since it's in their neighborhood. You know, when you've got kind of this... The word fascism is overused, and it's not fascism, it's privatization. But when the police start ignoring constitutional rights, that has a police state quality to it. And when the police cooperate closely with businesses in doing so, well, that's kind of a classic definition of fascism, if you want to look at fascism from the 30s. So that should not be ignored. If you want to call the Good Times, you can. Leave a message at 458-1100. 458-1100 is the number of the Good Times. I don't know if they have a message machine on now. I hope they do. Tell them you want to see a fair opportunity for a fair response. And it would be nice if they actually covered the issues about what's going on across the street, and not just the drama, the theater, and the latest police abuses mocking them and sort of, you know, I mean, I agree with Jeff's analysis almost down the line.
And I think we neglected to state the obvious, and it ties into this whole dictionary definition of fascism in its original form under Mussolini was when the state worked hand-in-hand with private corporate business interests to abrogate civil liberties for the benefit of those corporate interests. And just as the police apparently are doing that in this particular instance, apparently so too is Good Times.
And let's now hear the infamous tape. This is the tape that I was recording when I was arrested, and I was arrested. I was handcuffed and taken to the squad car, held there for 20 minutes, driven to the police station, finally released without the tape, which was taken by Sergeant Baker. It has to be said that the tape, I handed off the tape recorder to someone else who continued to record Baker's and Officer Tieford's behavior, that is to say their subsequent arrest of Zoe Feinbinder. I'm going to play the segment of the arrest that concerns the question of the credibility of Zoe Baker and kind of what happened after she began giving information about her name and her address and so forth. The issue as to her actual... She's charged with giving false information. I'm not going to go into that in any detail. You can speak to her about that. You can read the police report where you can actually have a copy of that too. But I want you to form your own judgment as to whether, on the basis of a blocking the sidewalk charge on this table, which is completely bogus, this series of subsequent events is justified. And you get to hear this now.
Excuse me, what? No, wait.
So we identify you. Don't have identification.
Hey, that's not fair. She cooperated with you, and now you guys are mad.
Hey, you know you're a female, don't you?
Stop!
Yeah, you can't do that.
You didn't do it. Hey, let go of her arm, bro. Let go of her arm. You're hurting her. Let go of her arm. Why are you doing that to her arm? What's the point? You feel like that. You have to do that to her to keep her in control.
That makes her feel like a man.
She's not doing anything but asking her to put her hand behind her back.
She's got a backpack on. How the hell is she going to put a hand behind her back? Why should we be quiet? There's every reason in the world to get mad right now. I can't.
Help! Help! I got my finger on the trigger, and niggas wonder why. But the sheriff's thing is your side. I got my finger on the trigger, and niggas wonder why. And the sheriff's thing is your side. One time trigger happy, no niggas up. 180 pounds. Two times my club. Can't get print on the knife. I throw away four. Get print on the blue chair. Pop, pop, pop.
Okay, go to the car.
At this time, the Good Times reporter showed up, I think. They heard the screams from their own window.
First Amendment.
This guy is just twisting her arm behind her back. She didn't do anything wrong.
I am even being peaceful and this man is hurting me.
She's not being arrested. She's not being arrested for tabling over there.
I don't
know. For protesting.
Don't
tell her anything.
I don't know. I decline to answer any questions.
And that's the soap opera High Points, the kind of confrontation provoked by the police insistence on not simply citing people but removing them, and also involving people that weren't really involved. I was the one who was involved. I was the individual who was at the table. She sat there a little while I went to the bathroom. She wasn't blocking the sidewalk, and I don't think Baker has any videoed evidence. And the only time then the sidewalk became blocked when Baker initiated this massive confrontation. If he'd come up to me and, you know, he would have gotten company and said, we're going to write you a ticket, and I would have written the ticket. There would have been a crowd gathered briefly, but he would have taken the ticket, and he would have given me the ticket and walked away. But he didn't do that. Anyway, why get into that again? I guess that your final point, Jeff, was around the Good Times issue, that there's a conflict of interest, that they do advertising as well.
Into the structural political analysis of, is this fascism or not fascism, which ultimately just becomes, you know, a matter of words and labels. But I believe it actually is, it's a proto-fascist or a fascist style act. I don't think that's, if there's a pattern, that's what we call fascism. But the point is this, is that Good Times is beholden to its advertisers. There's a conflict of interest. And the very linchpin of journalistic integrity is if the editorial department can separate itself from the revenue gathering department, the advertising department. And in this case, I raise the question of whether or not their editorial so-called reporting is really just cut and dried, colored by their... their need for advertising revenue, which does come from local businesses. And if that's the case, I'm not going to bother reading them. And, they should just really call it an advertising circular for the businesses if they don't want to start exercising some journalistic judgment.
Hear, hear. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. You're in the studio, so to speak, or we're in the studio, and you're at your radio. I'm here with Jeff, and my name is Robert Norse. We are doing the Sunday edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Of course, it's February 10th, 2002, last time I looked on the calendar. Phone number is 427-3772 if you want to call in and join us, 831-427-3772 if you're calling from out of the area. We will take your calls if you have any thoughts on anything that you've heard. I'm going to be playing some stuff about Hippie Planter. We got some other things coming up, like there's a city council meeting coming up on Tuesday, God help us, another one of those. Every second and fourth Tuesdays we get these city council dog and pony shows where who knows what happens. Usually the things that happen happen before the city council meeting. They were kind of agreed to and they pass on through, although, you have your occasional debate and controversy, particularly when one or more of the activists draws issues from off the so-called consent agenda. Though, as I mentioned, the city council's new tactic, Fitzmaurice and Crone agreeing, has been to, if for example, I have a lot of stuff, items I pulled from the consent agenda, they simply put it at the end of the meeting, which means it's 7 hours later. And so I'm not going to wait 7 hours to talk about the issues, and they can simply proceed without the public debate. But since this is clearly focused on me, and since it's content-based, it seems to me to be a violation of the Public Meetings Act, which does is supposed to assure people an opportunity to comment on items on the agenda. This is clearly designed to eliminate that kind of content. And so if I get the interest and support from you listeners out there, I may file a Brown Act complaint, and which brings me to my next point. I have a meeting every week called the HUF meeting at the Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom at the Baker's Square restaurant, 8:30 in the morning, and we divvy up tasks as to what to do and figure out what issues we think we're going to spend our time on. And I'm going to kind of, for the rest of this show, I'm going to make this sort of an open HUF meeting. I'm going to invite people to call in to volunteer to help. I'm going to invite people to call in to volunteer to criticize, or you can just listen in and not volunteer to do anything, which is what usually happens. And because what I'm going to point out is some needs that I as a HUF member have and other HUF members have for projects that we have currently ongoing, which concern restoring civil rights for homeless and poor people in Santa Cruz. And sometimes just civil rights for everybody. What Jeff and I were talking about, tabling downtown, affects all tablers. The most conservative to the most radical. If the police can do that to me, well, they can do it to somebody else. And that actually is what united people back in 1964 at the University of California at Berkeley when Chancellor Kerr went after people for tabling on the Bancroft Strip, as they called it, and of course provoked the Berkeley Free Speech Movement. Would that we could do something similar here. Not likely to happen. But HUF is trying to do a number of things. We're trying to organize so that students on campus form, they actually have an organization already, HUF UCSC, and I don't know about Cabrillo, we've got some interested people, but I don't think they've formed a formal organization. But if the students' populations of both campuses, often the most progressive kinds of groups in the area, start getting active around issues of civil rights and start linking those issues up to broader concerns, such as not just the civil rights of homeless people, but rent control, the destruction of affordable housing, or the county and the city's ignoring of affordable housing concerns, then I think we can actually start raising these issues in a more meaningful way. But to do that, we need to organize on campuses, and we need to organize downtown. And to do that, we need people to volunteer to help. So if that's something that interests you and you want to help off air, call 423-HUF, 423-4833. Put in an hour a week doing some tabling. You can get your issue out there. There is always a chance that a police officer will cite you for blocking the sidewalk. But if you're not blocking the sidewalk, are you going to spend your whole time avoiding doing any petitioning just on the fear that a police officer will come after you for that purpose? I would hope not. So there are a number of projects that, as I said before, that we're into here, and one of them is the camping ban issue. The camping ban, of course, is the law that criminalizes homeless people for setting up a campsite. The sleeping ban is that part of the law which criminalizes the homeless for sleeping after 11 o'clock at night, either outside or in a vehicle, on public property, period. In other words, there's no safe places for people to sleep. In a town with shelter for less than 160 people every night, with a homeless population of 1,000 to 2,000 people, a figure that never made its appearance on the KSCO show yesterday, though they're supposedly talking about the homeless issue, we have a real problem. We have a situation where most homeless people are criminals for engaging in natural life functions every night. And this is something that is recognized broadly by everybody. Everybody who has any sense on this issue, I gotta say. And there are some people, I guess, whose answer is, get out of town. That's the answer of the KSCO crowd. Well, there are a lot of homeless people who were born here. A third of them are working, if you want to look at the stats of the United Way Needs Assessment Project. And that kind of criminalization of one class of people is not only unconstitutional, not only bad social policy, but I think a fundamental human rights violation these days, these 21st century days, and are recognized as such by UN groups and the other groups that are international, the World Court of Justice, International Court of The Hague. And indeed, I've actually had the idea at one point, if someone's interested in this project, of inviting the UN to consider some complaints about human rights violations in Santa Cruz in terms of how it treats its homeless people. Now, no doubt you'll get Mike Rodkin to jump up and say, hey, this is what one of his lines is, and you hear that we heard this yesterday on KSCO, Here in Santa Cruz, we itemize how you can violate the rights of homeless people. He didn't say that. How they can sleep at night. Where they the fact that they can't sleep at night. We tell them, you can't sleep from 11 to 8:30 in the morning anywhere. In other cities, we just the police force just drives them out of town. Aren't we liberal? Well, I suppose compared to an out-and-out, overt, fascist police state mentality, yes. I mean, it's like I suppose in some segregated communities in the South consider themselves more liberal than others. But the idea that somehow this is something that we are going to be proud of, or we're going to allow to continue, is preposterous. Yet Rotkin has been putting out this line for years. It's amazing. And the problem, of course, is that the current city council, on which Rotkin, by the way, we're talking about Michael Rotkin, city council member, UCSC instructor, political grand seigneur, has been running for office repeatedly. I think he's had four terms so far. He'll probably be running for a fifth in at this fall, is my guess. And a public speaker on the issue of civil rights. But more important, of course, are the city council members, because they are in power right now. And the issue of the sleeping ban, or the broader camping ban, or legal places for people to camp and sleep, has been completely ignored, even though it was a very hot topic two or three years ago when they first came into office and they were supposed to address it. Instead of addressing it, they allowed then-Mayor Catherine Byers to sideline it into the task force to examine the camping ordinance, then the homeless issues task force, and finally the failure of nerve and political will, but the safe sleeping zones, which were proposed in the industrial zones in the summer of 2000, and then nothing. And what we have now are amendments that are completely face-saving maneuvers that actually make it worse for homeless people. The Kennedy-Premack-Porter amendments, Premack apparently is withdrawn from this, not because he wants to help homeless people more, because he wants to help them less. It's amazing. I guess his running for supervisor may have had some sort of impact there. He wants to buff up his image with the bigots in the county. Or maybe he's worried about what his image will be. I'm going to not go into a long discussion about the two amendments to the camping ordinance. I've talked about them in previous shows. I'm going to talk about them again because they're not coming up at this next city council meeting. I am going to be playing later in the show some debate from public testimony from March 1999, which was the last, well, there was probably a gathering after that, but it was a significant public gathering where Catherine Byers, then mayor, sold out the homeless, and Crone and Sugar and Fitzmaurice particularly went along with her, as of course did Rotkin, Hernandez, and Matthews, who were also then on the council. But what's really inspiring, as we heard before about a week ago, it was the testimony from the public. There was such a loud and generally united voice, other than from, there were some dissidents in the neighborhoods and from the downtown association and so forth, but there was all the progressive organizations stood up. End the sleeping ban. And, of course, the council refused to do this. And, indeed, even Sugar and Crone waffled around on the issue, though they were stronger then than they are now. They now have a majority to end the sleeping ban, of course, but they won't do it if they vote for it themselves. If Crone and Sugar led a drive to end the sleeping ban, there would be something coming out of that would involve an expansion of sleeping spaces for homeless people, something significant. But they won't do that. And, of course, they're blaming activists like myself because we're too confrontational. But the fact is that we see that their main problem is that they won't take a step unless they see they have the road cleared for them. And the reality is they're not going to get the road cleared for them. They got to do that work themselves. And since they won't, we have to. Which brings me, of course, to the next Huff project, which is a tent city on March 15th. Actually, the only thing scheduled is a mass rally at City Hall and a march. But there are some of us who hope that that will be a real tent city, similar to Camp Paradise, similar to Dignity Village in Portland, similar to Tent City 3 in Seattle, similar to Camp Goodwill in Toronto, where we offer a genuine alternative, because the Armory, which is slated to close on March 15th, I've been told will now close on March 1st. I haven't got that confirmed, which means that there will be space for less than 40 people every night. Again, a population 1,000 to 2,000 homeless people. So there need to be real alternatives addressed. And since City Council is refusing to address them, and since we don't have a Camp Paradise anymore, really, I mean, there's Camp Paradise folks around, and they're kind of hoping to set up, but they're not set up. And they're scared of setting up because Sergeant Officer Seeley is waiting in the wings with his ticket book, and the City Council and the Enviro fascists, as they call them, don't want to have the city involved in the greenbelt. I mean, don't want to have the campers involved in the greenbelts or in the city parks or along the river. Maybe they just want to put them on a barge and send them out to sea somewhere, or have them move to Fresno or other cities as the KSCO, and I gotta say it, bigots are suggesting, and that's what that kind of thinking is. All you KSCO listeners who agree with that, that's a form of bigotry. So March 15th is a day to get together, and I think maybe culminate a blanket drive, since it's warmer the last couple nights, but it was really cold there for a number of nights, and it's not generally, you're not able to sleep outside without some kind of covering. And even at the Armory, they were having a blanket shortage earlier in December. When I talked to the man who was headed that project in the ISSP, Interface Satellite Shelter Program, he acknowledged that as well. So that's a project that, if you're interested in calling 423-HUFF and involving yourself in, I would encourage you to do. There's also a need to deal with this camping ban situation, these amendments, which involves research, and I'll be talking about that again in the next couple of meetings. I'm hoping the city council members will wise up and realize that this three-day amendment that they're doing, they're saying that we're liberalizing things by letting people sleep for three vehicles per church parking lot for no longer a three-day-per-month restriction. But there isn't a three-day-month restriction. This is something that was a misreading of the law, and they've extended a three-day restriction to side yards, backyards, and business parking lots, all private property, since the city does not allow sleeping on public property. And we're going to need people to do some research on that issue, and we've actually had some interesting discussion on that, already reaching the city council, letters from Linda LeMaster, chair of the former Homeless Issues Task Force, from Sherry Connable, independent activist, from myself, from a video journalist and writer, Becky Johnson. But so far, no clear response from the city council members who acknowledge, no, there isn't a three-day limit on these places. So we may have to press that, and then we'll be talking about that more at a future Bathrop Spears Broadsides. We're going to need someone to transcribe the tapes from the 1999 city council meetings. We actually have copies of those tapes, but we need to have it written down because it's easier to read. There's the issue of outreach to other cities. In San Francisco, some of you may know, if you read the San Francisco Chronicle, the politicians are vying with each other to be who can be the more anti-homeless and sway the crowd that way, though they're calling themselves, using the New York Mayor Giuliani solutions to homelessness, which essentially involve criminalizing the homeless, driving them out of sight, and pleasing those who don't like to see homeless people on the streets. I'm actually going to do a show where I'm going to do a live interview with Indio Washington of Street News, the largest homeless newspaper in the country, sold by homeless people. It's really a thick newspaper, comes out five or six times a year, talking about the legacy of Giuliani. There's a lot of mythology in San Francisco and other cities that somehow Giuliani cleaned up New York City. Well, probably the same way Adolf Hitler cleaned up Berlin. I mean, no, he got rid of them gypsies, them, you know, them mentally ill people, them gay folks, and, of course, the homeless people. And he did. You know, initially, he didn't kill them. He put them all to work or locked them up in concentration camps. And they weren't... Initially, the word concentration camp did not have a bad stench to it. It just meant a place where there was a concentration of people. Although I guess the Boer War, where the British introduced concentration camps, did not have the best publicity either. But so, up in San Francisco, Gavin Newsom, a supervisor, is trying to cut back general assistance for people, those who are willing to jump through the hoops to get it to work to get it at all. And there's proposals to bar homeless people from holding signs up on medians where you often see them doing so, "We'll work for food," or "Got any spare change," or that sort of thing. Using pretexts about public health and safety, what it really is, though, is embarrassment. And also, of course, the demonization of the homeless, the idea that they're spitters, they're yell at you, they're ugly, whatever you will, or that they're engaging in abusive behavior. Instead of course, using the statutes that actually address abusive behavior, they want to create new laws. I think we should be in solidarity with groups in other cities that are fighting the struggle to keep and to restore civil rights of homeless people. The Coalition on Homelessness is a particularly strong group in that regard. Paul Bowden is getting demonized the way I'm getting demonized here in Santa Cruz, and we need to support him, and we need to support other groups doing this. So we're looking for folks who want to help in that aspect. Give a call to 423-HUFF if you do. If you think you're good at, you like to be in contact with people in other cities. We're looking for someone who's interested in doing that. I'm hoping that we can get an update on the Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women's recent meeting, and there were some affordable housing issues that came up in the county involving Tower Lodge. We got a brief discussion of that from supervisorial candidate Michael Schmidt last meeting, last show or the show before. Affordable housing is coming up on the Tuesday agenda as well. And I'm going to talk about that agenda now. Why don't we go directly into that agenda since the City Council is meeting in 2 days. There's a claim, City Council meetings, first of all, there's a 12 o'clock closed City Council meeting. You can actually go to the closed meeting, which is not in City Council chambers. It's in the City Manager's Conference Room, which is right kind of around the corner in the same U-shaped building. You go to the main office of the mayor, and he'll direct you to the City Council meeting, the closed meeting. You can't stay past the oral communications or public comment period, but you can go and speak if you want, and you could speak on the case of a man who is having a claim considered. It won't do you any good, of course, but it's always good if the public weighs in at some level. Usually it's only useful if a bunch of people weigh in, but there's some of us who engaging in these masochistic individual tactics like myself, who continue to do that anyway. There's a man, James Michael Lysel, I believe, who is, he spoke at the Citizens Police Review Board about a complaint. And I'm going to talk more about his case later in the show. There's then a 1:30 hearing of the City Council on budget concerns. And this really is the opportunity to talk about the skewing of the budget, where the police and the Parks and Rec, police, law enforcement agencies, in essence, get more than half the city budget. And social services gets a tiny fraction of the city budget. Very little. I mean, well, they'll spend $1.5 million to restore a Poganip clubhouse, but they're ranting and raving about motel vouchers for Camp Paradise when here are a bunch of people who are displaced by the flood, who are residents of Santa Cruz, many of them for a long period of time, who have been homeless. Yeah, they were homeless, and they had to form their own shelter because city services did not either provide for them or allow them to do it themselves without the most intense and continuous harassment. So that budget hearing is coming up at 1:30. We have a call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio. Hello? 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 Having a little trouble hearing you. Speak up.
Can you hear me?
It sounds like a CB radio. We can't really hear you. Are you? Try one more time.
Try to call in.
Really can't hear you.
Hear me.
Now I can hear you. Go ahead. Now I can't hear you. Sorry. Yeah. Go ahead. You know, you got to try again, either from a different location.
Okay. Bye.
Yeah.
And do call in again, caller. I'm not trying to cut you off. I really couldn't hear you. So do call back. This show exists on callers. Much as I like to hear myself talk. 1:30 is a budget hearing on Tuesday, which means they're going to supposedly look at how to deal with the budget issues. This is from the two most, quote, liberal members of the City Council, Porter and Crone. And unfortunately, when you look at this online, as I was doing, they don't attach the budget or what they're going to talk about. So I don't know what they're going to be doing. You have to go to the City Council offices to look at that, or you can go to the library today, which there are packets which describe what the City Council is doing in terms of the documentation, although some of those packets sometimes aren't even in the library, and you have to go over to the City Council offices. The 3 p.m. session has a lot of items on what's called the consent agenda, and that's the agenda that will pass just with a very simple vote without any discussion of the individual items unless you or a council member or another member of the public pulls those items off the agenda. And there are a couple of them that interest me. We got a call here, and we'll talk about those in a moment.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Robert, can you hear me?
I can.
That disgusting display last night I overheard on KSCO at 10 o'clock.
Uh-huh.
It was kind of like a disgusting display of America, and it's no wonder the American people are hated around the world. They were good examples as to why.
Well, yeah, I think there was a lot of stereotyping and prejudice, and you know, and also personal attacks that didn't have much to do with the issues. No. That's for sure.
I think he did real good casting pearls before human swine like that. That thing you talked to, you know, Friday morning or whatever. But
yeah,
it was you're casting pearls before swine. But
well, yeah, I mean, it's KSCO has a certain point of view, and they cater to a certain audience. It's true.
Yeah.
You know, so that sort of goes with the territory.
Yeah, that was quite interesting to just kind of like see the trash that called in, and they were all condemning the homeless people, and they're so stupid and ignorant that they don't know that they're scapegoating people. You know what I mean? People blow them. It was absolutely repulsive, but KSO is absolutely repulsive. So you had that one Christian guy, Rory, calling in from Watsonville. He's got 8 kids or something, Christian, and here he's trying condemning the poor people. He doesn't know one thing about the scripture. You know?
Right. Well. You know, in these times, the irony is they set us all against each other. The folks who are listening to that station are not as well off as many other people, you know, I mean, not as many other people, as we're all pretty much, many of us, in the same boat, and yet we spend our time attacking each other. That's the kind of the irony here, instead of going after, you know, the Enron types and the warmongers and the...
Oh, those are good people, Robert.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it's written in Scripture, you know. It's,
I guess. Right. Well,
yeah, anyway, take care.
Hey, thank you, Ed.
Thanks, Steve.
Yeah, I mean, I. 427-3772 is the phone call number here if you want to call in and give us your thoughts. Talking about the upcoming city council meeting, there is a item number 6 is a resolution opposing a reallocation of sales tax and sales and state revenue sources. And this is something that I just sort of look at things. These are things I might pull off the agenda to talk about. The problem here is they're changing, apparently, the amount of bucks that the city can keep by requiring that the city pay some attention to the affordable housing needs. And I may be misreading it, but if that's the case, well, maybe the city should pay more attention to affordable housing needs, and it could keep its money instead of spending it on poganip clubhouses and massive expenditures for the police department, a new shooting range in the basement, and a $7 million cost overrun in the police station, and things of that sort. Item number 8 gives parking spaces to Nelson and Plumley Flowers Valentine's Day special event. And it essentially takes money from them it sells it to them, $131 for privatizing some parking spaces for the Nelson and Plumley. They're a candy store and a flower shop on the corner of Cedar and Cathcart. And rumor has it, they haven't responded to my calls or inquiries, that they were one of the large complainers about the farmers market drumming, which indeed where there were drummers who were driven away from the Red Church last fall. They were drumming in the parking lot next to the farmer's market. And also supposedly they were behind the Janet Blazer, they were not behind the Janet Blazer regime at the farmer's market, but they were pressuring the farmer's market to, quote, clean up the sidewalk. And I don't know, again, I can't really speak to the merit of these charges, but the Plumleys are a conservative force, I think, on the downtown association or in the downtown area. I don't know if you're south of Laurel where you actually can be in the downtown association. I'm not quite clear on that. It's one of the controversies. But here they are being given parking spaces they can pay for, and apparently they hired hosts in past years to host their Valentine's Day event. I'm still thinking about this one. Another interesting thing is if you look at item 9, which is a sewer infiltration reduction project, what does that have to do with the homeless? Well, there's some shelter down below, I guess. Thanks a lot. If you look at the agenda, it talks about a $27,000 or so appropriation, changing money from one account to another. But if you read the documentation, you see it's $377,000 to pay for a Felton booster station upgrade. When this money is spent here, it can't be spent there, you know. And again, I'm not familiar with all the ins and outs of this. I just note when incomplete information is given, when large amounts of money seem to be going for without a lot of examination. And again, I'm not an expert on sewage projects, so, but I run through this stuff because I'm in a sort of naive Joe citizen looking at the Santa Cruz City Council agenda, and of course when I try to speak on it, they'll tell me wait 7 hours, so I probably won't have a chance to say a word. But I think that the citizenry should get more active and involved in these issues, because there are plenty of people who don't like the way the city council is acting for a number of reasons, and there should be public accountability here. Another thing is there's going to be a change in the parking citation fines, and this is of interest to those of you who have these big toxic things they call automobiles. The one that I drive around town has all these bumper stickers on it, you know. Instead of being sensible enough to get a bicycle, I insist on parading around town on this big obsolete death machine, but hey, who can tell me? They're going to be raised, they want to raise downtown fines from $12 to $15 for a parking meter fine, which they think will get them $134,000. And they're going to raise beach fines from $16 to $20 and then increase various other fines. The point of all this is to increase fines in order to address concerns of people in the residential areas. They want to establish a downtown residential permit parking program and help expand existing residential zones. And they're going to hire new personnel with this, with at least a quarter of this money. Again, you know, I don't know. I mean, expanding the bureaucracy here. I do want to give a kudo to the city council for doing one small good thing, it looks like. Again, I'm only a naive person reading the agenda for the first or second time in the documentation. There's an item on the evening agenda, which is the adoption of an ordinance which will eliminate a section that requires any person desiring to open, excavate, or dig any trench or opening to get permission from the street superintendent, sign a written application, and pay $75. So, I don't think you should have to pay $75 to engage in a project which is going to be